Hoe kan jouw organisatie verbeteren? Hoe zorg je voor collega's die gelukkiger zijn? En hoe geef je zelf vorm aan je carrière? Je hoort het allemaal op het podcastkanaal New Business Radio Work. Met wetenschappelijke inzichten en de beste praktijkvoorbeelden. Check je favoriete podcastplatform en abonneer je op New Business Radio Work. New Business Radio.
Special met Martine Howard.
Yes, Jan-Willem Muller en Jeroen Keller. Welcome here at New Business Radio. It's great to have you here. We're going to talk about Infinity Recycling, but also about the innovations and the next steps. If you really look at Infinity Recycling, how would you really say what is it exactly what you're doing, Jan-Willem?
What we're exactly doing is actually we're trying to disrupt a value chain that exists already for over 50 to, let's say, 100 years. We're all consuming on a daily basis a significant amount of plastics or a significant amount of goods. And we never thought about it, how we're going to get rid of those products other than just throwing it in the bin. And what we're trying to do is those products that we use every day, bringing them back to where they originally were made from to move, you know, create circularity. That is what we're really doing and helping those companies who establish that to get them livelihood.
Yeah. Jeroen, where is this coming from? Where is this mission coming from?
It's effectively two things. One is obviously as a society, we were going to become more sustainable, which means that we want to reuse resources, materials. And secondly, it's effectively also the fact that we're running out of resources, right? If you think about fossil fuels, there's a finite volume of fossil fuels left. So it's not only the right thing to do in terms of, you know, sustainability, but it's also a necessity if we want to continue, you know, consuming plastics and polymer related products as we've done over the last 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a very important topic for you.
It is also very personally. Important. And personally, and I think, you know, kind of tapping into this, we met each other 6 years ago. I advised the company that Jan-Willem invested in. Mm-hmm. We're very complementary in terms of skill set. And what we realized is because it is a disruptive transition, meaning that, you know, roles and responsibilities will be different in a circular economy than they were in a linear economy, where you effectively only have two dominant players. That means that the incumbent industry will typically not, you know, participate. They will not invest because they're not going to harm, you know, disrupt their own business. And that provides a real opportunity for, you know, a new stakeholder like ourselves to really help that disruption going forward. And I think that's really the opportunity that we saw. We saw this needs to happen. If this happens, it will be massive. But you won't have an incumbent industry that will actually participate. So it's a real opportunity for a disruptor like us to really help move this forward. And that's really where we stepped in. And, you know, it started with a vision. And what happens with visionaries is initially everybody laughs about you and say, well, this is not a good idea. But we see also with the final close of our fund, there was a real role for us. And we've really done what we set out 6 years ago. And you know, we've got a lot of supporters that understand why it's so important to have, you know, risk capital helping to accelerate this transition.
Yeah. So if we go back to that beginning 6 years ago, you already said it, a lot of people laughed maybe in the beginning, but also for yourself, if you have an idea, if you have a vision, it's a next step to really make a step to do something with that kind of idea and with that vision. How did that start?
Well, sometimes you have events in your life that make it easy, or you're in jobs where you're you're handcuffed to your bonuses, your mortgage, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But I think at some point in your life, you also have to realize what are the opportunities you see in front of yourself. And coming back to what Jeroen just said about the disruption, it's not that I got into recycling because I saw a piece of plastic on the beach and I thought, wow, you know, I'm going to clean up the world is a better place. That's a big part of it. But what was more in part of it, you're seeing a value chain of the petrochemical and the brand owner industry. As Jeroen said, they're not willing to change. But what we saw is that opportunity came that you have to change it in order to make it profitable to get to the circularity. And now being part of that transition, seeing that opportunity in front of you, was a choice you had to make at some point to go. And then I think there's a saying, if you want to conquer the UK, you have to burn the ships you arrived in. And that's what you have to do. You have to put your mind to, you know, one goal only, put that dot on the horizon and focus only on that and then go for it. And that means give up your job, you know, pull on the belt, you know, one feather to make sure, and then get the family support that they're willing to support you to go on this endeavor, and then find a partner you trust, because let's not underestimate, you're going on an endeavor. You have to do this with somebody you really trust over and over, because you're getting into something, who knows where it's going to end up. You don't want to stop halfway. And I think both Jeroen and myself were a point of our careers that we said, well, you know, this is the time to make a change. The opportunity is here to grab. We both saw the same vision. And then, as Jeroen said, you have to be complementary on what you're trying to achieve. And again, trust and durability, those are the two key points to get this done.
Yeah. Was it really a concrete moment for yourself where you had, yes, this is the moment, I have to do this?
Yeah, I at one point I really saw that, well, the company I worked for stopped to exist, so that also helps to make a change. And a friend of mine said, if you didn't make a change, make a smart one, because you always find another job, right? Certainly in today's market. Mm-hmm. But I think you then have to really make a concrete decision, is this the next step you want to do? And yeah, that is almost a split second that you feel, yes, I want to do it. But then, of course, you need to find the right people to do it with. But for me, it was clear cut that this is an opportunity and this is going to succeed. And of course, during that endeavor, you think sometimes, oh shit, I shouldn't say that, but are we going to make it?
Yeah.
And we've had a couple of those, but then, you know, one day it was me, the other day it was Jeroen, who maybe thought we should go left or right again. But that's where you help each other through.
Yeah. What was very important at the beginning when you started working together? Because it's almost like a marriage, I think.
It is, actually. That's what we keep telling our wives. Contract. We have a second marriage. So it's about indeed finding alignment. Like, you need to make sure that you're both having the same vision. You share a vision. You're both also in there for the long term, i.e. you want to make this happen. But I think what we've done very successfully early on is, and that probably comes with age, but to have self-awareness, to say, well, there are certain things I can do, there are certain things we can do together. Mm-hmm. But in order for this to succeed, we need to bring in other people that complement us, that have experiences that we don't have, in order to really make us credible. And I think that's what, very early on, we decided to build a team. There was no cash, but we needed people. So in other words, you spend a lot of money before you actually see the end result. And also, for us to really take a step back and say, you know, we're not the only ones here. We need to have other team members that work with us and that, you know, form part of that kind of collaboration. And I think you can extend this also to the external world. So be very honest, when we started initially the discussions, I told him, you know, a lot of the investors might be pet cams, right? And Jeroen said, they'll never do this. So in other words, you also need to understand, okay, who's actually going to help this transition? Which companies will actually help us push this forward?
Yeah.
So it's not only with the team that you need to complement it, but you also externally need to think, who are actually going to be the sponsors of this transition? And I think that's what we've done quite successfully, you know, step by step over the last 6 years.
Yeah. So the self-awareness is very important, but also that helicopter view, something exactly. like that, is also very important.
Exactly.
Yeah. That mix, that combination of those.
Exactly.
Two.
Because you can't do this by your own. It's just, yeah. And this is also going forward, when you talk about investments, you work with entrepreneurs, right? So we're not there as kind of spreadsheet kings to say, hey, we're the investor, we know everything better. No, you support a good team with a good idea and you help them move forward.
Yeah.
And I think that collaborative mindset, to have the modesty on, this is what I can do, this is what I can't do, and this is where I need to have somebody compliment myself, that I think is really critical.
Yeah. Yeah. And here again, trust between the two of you and between all the employees is very important. But also, if you want to work together with people, trust is so very important.
Absolutely. And I think, let's first start, you have to have a vision or a mission, and it sounds, you know, business-wise, but you have to work towards the same common goal.
Yeah.
And I think you need to determine that. The people who joined us in the beginning, quite proud of that, who are still with us today, they took a huge salary cut to join us. They took, you know, somebody worked for a big consultant, and she was on the track of becoming a partner. well, today pregnant and receiving, hopefully getting her first child pretty soon. So we're quite excited on that one as well. But she chose, no, I'm going to step into this because this is an impact fund. These guys are going to try to make a difference for creating that circularity. And I'm willing to, I want to join that that, you know, that vision. And we have the same with some other of our colleagues who really stepped in. And I think having that vision and mission and believing in it and having that conviction that, you know, we're going to get there really brought those people on board. Because, yeah, we're not both not micromanagers. Maybe we need to be a little more structured here and there as well. So as Jeroen said, we know our flaws. And getting then people on board to do that with you is great because it's, yeah, it's a journey.
Yeah.
And then it's successful. We received funding from a significant group of investors, got us to that first stage. We're able to now pay the people that what they deserve, but also having them join in what we then call the carry, right? The bonus or the future benefits that hopefully we will make gives them belonging.
Yeah.
And they're part of it. And then we just moved into our new office last Monday. That's our own office. It's like buying your first house, right? It creates that culture that you're trying to build. And yeah, that's also a journey. And once you've made that culture, it's very difficult to change it. So you need to be from the start, yeah, lead by example, or at least, you know, show that what you're preaching is you're also doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Later on, we're going to talk about now and also about the future. Yep. But if we go back, that first step, the first moment that you're going to work together with a company, what was very important then?
What was very important then, I think, is first of all that you're committed. I think that's number one. You do this, and I said earlier about burning the ships.
Yeah.
You have to be committed, and you also should not be afraid that. You know, you're going to fail, right? You're going to make mistakes. You're going to screw up. We did a couple. And you know, then look each other in the eye and be open enough about it to tell each other that it doesn't work. I mean, we definitely, as you said earlier, we had a marriage. We definitely had fights. We definitely were not on the same par from now and then. But at the same time, we were fighting for that common goal and you're trying to achieve that. So having, Jeroen said it earlier, having that set and having that focused on, the rest is just small steps forward. So commitment, really putting in you know, the work and the hours and making sure that you have the same story.
Yeah, yeah. We're already 6 years further now, so a lot happened. We're going to talk about this later on in the next part of this special here on New Business Radio.
Van hippe start-up tot ijzersterke multinational.
Iedereen praat mee.
Dit is New Business Radio.
Yes, you're listening to a new business special here with Jan-Willem Muller and Jeroen Kelder from Infinity Recycling. We already talked about the beginning of everything, how it all started. But what I really find interesting is that you're yourself are entrepreneurs, but you're also helping other entrepreneurs now. And I think that's really a wonderful combination to really inspire each other, I think.
No, I think that's a very good point. And we see this in some instances, quite a few instances. This is a popular market, right? It means that if you want to invest in a company, it's quite often a competitive setting.
Yeah.
So they have a choice between you and other investors. And what we've seen very quickly, they like to work with us. Entrepreneurs like us to come on board. Why? Because we've been through a similar journey ourselves. This was 6 years. We started with nothing. Everybody said we were crazy. You know, 6 years, there was no money coming in. So that means we've actually showed ourselves that perseverance, that kind of belief that, yes, we'll work this out and we'll actually make this happen.
Yeah.
And that is obviously what entrepreneurs have gone through themselves. So being on the same page, showing that, yes, I've actually gone through this myself, that helps a great deal. And I think in addition, if you look at the pipeline that we've built up, we've been at it for 6 years. So a lot of companies that we have invested in, companies that we are looking to invest in, our companies we already know for many years, to whom we've already provided quite a lot of support. Might not be financial support, but we've given them advice, we've made introductions for them. And in other words, that really has built up the credibility and really built up the trust between us and those entrepreneurs. And I think ultimately investing is also a human business, right? It's people management.
Yeah.
So as an investor, you can come up with hundreds of millions and say, hey, I'll decide and I'll help you what to do. Ultimately, it comes down to, do they trust you? Do you trust them? And can you, you know, breed each other? Can you actually influence each other so that you jointly go into the same direction? And I think that's what we've been able to successfully deploy. So all the companies that we invest in, We know management very well. They know us very well. And we're very supportive of them.
Yeah.
And that means that if there's a difficult decision, that discussion for us is a lot easier than for an investor who only, as I said, manages by a spreadsheet, only shows up once a year and is an asshole once a year. That's, in my opinion, especially early stage, that's not the right approach.
Now, so trust is a very important thing also here, but also growing together.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The possibility to really grow together.
No, and then that's also, these entrepreneurs obviously have visions like we have, but that's exactly where you want to bring it together.
Yeah.
And you want to say, where do we jointly go?
Yeah.
And ultimately, if that aligns, then you're in a very good spot.
Yeah.
Because then you work exactly for the same objective.
Yeah.
And you can then also take each other's feedback and criticism, right? If you know we're all aligned, we're all vested in this, then you can give each other feedback. And that feedback is critical because, as Jan Willem said, whether it's setting up a fund or setting up a company, there's a lot of things that go wrong. There's a lot of things that you don't do right. But you need to be honest about this.
Yeah.
And you need to give each other that feedback. And if you know you're aligned, you can take that feedback.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful thing if you can really have that open communication with each other. But then again, it starts with trust. Otherwise, you cannot be honest with each other.
Exactly. No, yeah. Exactly. And trust comes with showing indeed that you can actually provide, you know, add value, if you like.
Yeah.
Showing that you're in the same boat, that you're vested in what you're doing. And that starts therefore on day one or day minus one, if you like.
Yeah. Jan Willem, there comes a moment where you're going to start to working with some companies. Can you tell us, can you give us some examples? How did it all start then? Because it's quite a big step then.
It's a very big step. I mean, to give you where we're stepping into. We're stepping into a market that is producing 400 million tons of plastic on a global scale. So
yeah.
400 million tons is being produced every year. And we're going to go to a billion. And we're only recycling 10% of that. So what these companies are endeavoring is we're trying to find a group of technologies that is going to create out of that 400 million to 20, 30, maybe 40% of that market that with these technologies we can recycle. So the opportunity is so big that gets clouded, right? These people think that they're green because they're converting a piece of plastic to a new piece of plastic, and then they're going to conquer the world, and the famous hockey sticks on selling licenses or building factories. So
yeah.
There is a huge balloon that they're filling up, and everybody wants to speak to them, right? As you mentioned, it's a hot topic. Every
yes.
CEO, every petrochemical wants to talk to you. they come to your plant. So these people are living on a cloud sometimes. But then when it comes to investors, they get all these basic questions because it's a difficult topic, right? It's machines, it's factories and so forth. So when we meet these people, you sometimes see a sigh of relief. Finally, somebody, I've got a background in petrochemicals. Jeroen by now is also Mr. Petrochemical after 6 years being in this market, even though he doesn't have that background. But if we come in, you see this, and is that trust? Is that relief? Is that a feeling of understanding? They're being heard. And I think that is step number one, that with four or five remarks, we can tell them, okay, we know what your troubles are, right? We know what you're going through. These people have been at it. When we come in, they've already been at it for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first step. And then it's, the question, what are you making? What are you trying? Which problem are you trying to solve? Does that fit? And there we're already very harsh. We say, well, this is what we can and this is what we cannot do. And I think what we cannot do is as important on what we can do.
Yeah.
And to be very clear from that from day one, that helps these people as well. And then from there, then you go on, of course, in your normal due diligence process. But I think for us, when we meet somebody new, and that comes a combination of they're coming to us these days because we're more established than we were a couple of years ago. But also we go out on conferences and find new technologies. But it's that first 10 minutes, as if you were dating, right? The first couple of minutes, you know if it's going to be something. It's the same here. Is there a click? But more importantly, what you're doing, does it fit in our mandate? Does it fit in where we think this market needs to go? And from there, it can go very quick.
So if I would talk with you, what can you do and what is really not interesting for you?
My first question is going to be, what are you making? So what product are you bringing to the market? Do I need to explain the product to a Shell, an Exxon, a Dow, the big conglomerates? If I need to explain to them what your product is, it's most likely not going to work because we can't change the incumbent industry. There's billions of dollars of investment in refineries and petrochemical units. They're not going to change that overnight.
No.
So if and our fund is a 10-year fund, we need to get the solution tomorrow and not yesterday. So my first question will be, what are you making and what problem are you trying to solve? And based on that answer, then we go on. And then we can help you.
Yeah. Yeah. For you, it's the same, I think, huh?
I look
or
at
do
it,
you look
I
differently think, at it? You?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good question. We're very complementary. So I've invested my whole career. I've done a lot of, you know, M&A transactions, so integrating businesses. So I'm very much looking at things from an investor's point of view, which means that, to Jan-Willem's point, if we're comfortable with a product, with being able to sell that product in a market, what I typically look at is, what's the team looking like? Who are we actually investing in? Because ultimately, investment, it's all about the team. It's about the execution. Yeah, you can have a great idea, but a bad team will run it in the ground. You can have a bad idea, but a good team will still make something out of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So for us, team is quite important. And that has to do then also with, what is the wider organization? Who are the other investors? You don't want to invest in, and I think that doesn't translate very well, but a company with a kind of Polish lender as a shareholder structure where you have 10, 15, 20 completely misaligned investors. So you want to make sure if you step in, it's actually a company where, you know, you have an investor base that you can work with, you have an investor base that is relatively aligned, and you can actually jointly help move the company forward. So going back to your question, those are kind of the aspects I typically look at, and that complements each other very well, because then you get a good sense of, is this actually going to work or not?
Yeah, here again, also that transparency, that open community is very important, I think. Eh?
Exactly. No, exactly. I think what we see quite often where companies fail is because they hide things, because they don't really understand what's going on. Yeah. They don't really talk about this. And investors, they're not bad people per se, but investors are annoyed if there's stuff that wasn't really, you know, forecasted, if there's stuff that's been hidden. That's really where you have investors annoyed pretty quickly. So I think for us, coming back to what you said, it's about transparency.
Yeah.
And companies need to be honest. We understand that these companies have tight budgets. They don't have many people to work with, which is why you put a supervisory board in place to complement what is lacking at executive level. So there's a lot of mitigants that you can put in place, but you do need that trust and that open dialogue, because that's where you can understand what the risks are and you can identify how best to address those.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the scaling as well, right? These people have developed the technology from scratch, from a laboratory or something else, but they're going to a new period of their transition, right? And that an entrepreneur or a scientist is not typically a guy who can also build the right plant. So you have to be open enough as a team to accept that if you may need to step down as a CEO, right? We've had several technologies where the founder is no longer the CEO, and that's a tough discussion. That's not an easy one, because it's their whole livelihood that's in there, and it's not my money. That's not the option here. It is about, now you need somebody else with different skill set to actually build a factory. A guy who builds a factory of is not the same guy who's developing, or a woman who's developing it in a lab. Now that transition, moving from that different phase in the life cycle, that's the biggest problem that we see on management style, that the people have to accept it, because you need to get the whole company behind that. And it's also the crucial part of succeeding, because the focus needs to be on, certainly in the case of we're investing, we need to see, you know, bricks on the floor, boots on the floor. We need to see factories being built.
Yeah.
And then you need professionals to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's on one side, it's very positive, right? That a lot of things are changing. But on the other side, like you already said, it's also quite challenging.
Definitely. I mean, the question is, is these factories, are they going to work? Is the technology going to be there? And again, that comes back to the same experiences that we run through. If you start a fund or build a new experience, you need to know what you're not good at. And hiring experts doesn't automatically mean that it's going to be a success. We see a lot of companies, oh, I'm going to hire a builder and they're going to build a factory for us because that's what they do.
Yeah.
No, you're going to need your own people on board to please them. And it's not a nice way to say it, but it is. These people are also in business of building a plant to making money. But it gets delayed. It will cost more money. And yeah, the biggest problem that we see with, and it's all, again, coming back, we just spoke in the break about cliches, and cliches are true, unfortunately, in many cases, you're not going bankrupt because you got a wrong technology. You're going bankrupt because you ran out of cash. So the cash management is so crucial for these kind of startups.
Yeah, Yeah. You recently approved your sixth investment, three Dutch companies, a Swiss company, and two Fortune companies that will build in the Netherlands. A quite big step. Again.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, hopefully we'll be doing anywhere around 12 to 13, 14 investments.
Yeah.
Mainly focused on the European market. That's odd because, you know, in Europe we don't have the biggest plastic problem. There's more in Southeast Asia and, of course, in other countries in the world. But what's important that we incubate the right technologies. And it's important that we incubate them, making sure that we have at least amount of CO2 emissions, methane emissions, that we have an efficiency there, that we create that the machines actually do what they're supposed to do and they're robust. So the incubation here in Europe on the most stringent rules will only benefit later on when we expand these technologies to other areas.
Yeah.
Secondly, Europe, we're ahead worldwide at the moment on sorting our waste. So we have a better, because, and that's not because we're so good, it's because we don't have another option. And in the US, you got the Midwest. Now you open it up and you just dump your waste in there. We don't have that luxury.
No.
And we're banning, luckily, the waste movements to other countries.
We really need to do this. Huh?
We need to do this. So we're forced to do this, basically. And that made us that we are better in sorting at the moment, which gives us the ability to incubate those technologies we're supporting. And hopefully then, from there on, and, you know, it could be an export product of the Netherlands, but export product of Europe, we then start building these technologies where it's really needed, Southeast Asia, South Americas, and other places in the world.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a big opportunity here, right? There's a big chance also for Europe here to really make the difference.
Correct.
If you really look at this.
No, and that's also why we, to your witness point, decided to set it up in the Netherlands, in Northwest Europe. That's where the petrochemical industry is located in terms of Europe. And indeed, this is a real opportunity for us to then eventually export those technologies, export the knowledge that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I always refer to this anecdote. Before the fund, I did some investments in Colombia in the water industry. And I remember entering this town hall in Medellin, and I thought, well, this will be filled with Colombian local stakeholders. And it was filled with Dutch people. Why? Because it was about water.
Yeah.
And circular economy, I think we can achieve something similar. So we can make it water 2.0, whatever you call it. But we can actually, as the Netherlands, as Northwest Europe, really be the leader in this transition.
Wonderful. Wonderful. We're going to talk further about this topic in the next part here at a special of New Business Radio.
Van hippe start-up tot ijzersterke multinational.
Iedereen praat mee.
Dit is New Business Radio.
Jan-Willem and Jeroen, we already talked a lot about a lot of things. But if you really look at, Infinity Recycling, you have started the new year well. In December, you added three new institutional investors to your circular plastic fund, reaching 135 million in committed capital. That's really a big step again.
Yes, and in the meantime, we've actually added a few more investors.
Yes.
So yesterday, we got the fund to 172 million euros, and next month will be our final close where we'll expect to get close to our hard cap of 180 million.
Yeah, at the end of April. Huh?
Exactly. Bearing in mind that our target was 150, so we'll be, you know, 15%+ above our target, which in a difficult fundraising environment shows how important it is what we do.
Yeah.
This is not about, you know, us tapping ourselves on the shoulder, but more we're doing something where, you know, there's a need for, and people acknowledge that we have a role to play.
Yeah.
And I think that's really exciting because it means, you know, we also have buy-in in terms of what we're trying to achieve. And that is quite critical. You can invest money and you can hope that these investments go well, but you also need buy-in from broader stakeholders, from governments, from public authorities, from corporate players that all want to make this succeed.
Yeah.
And I think that's the kind of environment that we're in now. And, you know, if you bring it back 6 years, none of these parties were involved at the time. So I think that's, again, a job well done from us and everybody that has joined us, is to really mobilize interest and mobilize capital.
Yeah. Like you already said, there is really a need. That's clear. But what makes you so different than other funds?
Good question. I think we're quite specialized in this market. And we have looked at it very much with the kind of complementary skill set of Jan-Willem and myself from a very kind of market perspective. So as opposed to say, well, I'm looking for investments that give me a return, we said, this is a problem. this has to be solved. This will be solved. There's a market out there that's huge. And we actually, because we know the market very well, we know all these different stakeholders, we're probably well positioned to find effectively a new market, to help build that new market, in which, as I said before, you go from a linear centralized economy to a circular distributed economy. So roles and responsibilities will be different. And you can only do this successfully and develop this as a win-win-win if you're engaged with all these different stakeholders. If you're independent, as we are, and you don't have a vested interest in one part of the value chain. And that really makes us stand out in a market that, as Jan Willem said before, is currently dominated effectively by, you know, the brand owners and the petrochemical companies. They're not necessarily talking to each other that much. The waste industry is not really involved in this. They all speak different languages. So you need somebody like us that brings it all together, that identifies what is the common ground and how can we pursue that common ground, you know, in the interest of the economy and the environment, and obviously in the interest of us as investors.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine that also for the future, this is going to be more and more important to really have this mix of all those things.
Certainly, in my opinion, you have to, because we said it earlier, the incumbent industry is not interested in changing this. The incumbent industry is not really focused on changing it. And why would you? You're making your returns. And the belief that this part of this new resource is becoming a new part of that value chain. And you know, it's a culture shock. And why do I say culture shock? You see people that are, if you look at the petrochemical industry, you drive by Moerdijk in Rotterdam or on Pernis, these are factories of millions of tons. You know, you cannot just put, you know, piles and piles of waste there to start converting it, because then we're starting moving waste around. What we need to do is, it's going to be much more a model of smaller plants across the countries to basically convert this plastic into feedstocks that then can be used again for that petrochemical industry. So that is, if you think about it, a complete different thing that we've been trying to do for the last 40 years, where we were trying to optimize oil as much as we can. And now all of a sudden, you have to tell these, and we sometimes say Ludwigshaven police, and what I mean by that is the BASF is the biggest cracker system in Europe, situated in Germany, and you have to tell this, you know, person who's been doing this for the last 40 years, this engineer who's done some amazing things, so we completely do the opposite of what he's been working at. So that culture shock, I think that's where we really are a difference. And you see it in our investments. If we take a company like Prime, who just recently started up their first plant, They had difficulties in finding funding. Jeroen said it earlier, petrochemical industry is not investing, so they had to eventually go to a stock market to get funding. And we really assisted that company with two investments together with our LPs to bring them to a stage of where their first plant is ready. And now they need to scale up. And that scale up, there we need that bigger capital. And I think that's something that we've been working on here in the last couple of months as well. How are we going to find that next level of investment? How are we going to find that next level? And that's a tough decision. And we were luckily that, again, also that earlier this week, another industry player has put 10 million into the company, or 12 million in total, to really help it now moving it to the next stage. And we're really trying to get these companies to be investable, for banks to understand this market, for other debt financiers to understand this market, to bring them to the next stage, because we can't do this alone. 180 million sounds like a lot of money, but we're a drop on an iceberg. I mean, we said it earlier, this is a market of 400 million tons of plastic. That is, you know, if you think that 1,000 tons of plastic is close to $1 million, so do that times 400, you know what kind of market we're growing to be. And so we need billions of investments in this market to change.
Yeah, yeah. Also, Dutch companies, right? Because if you really look what's going on now, it's really wonderful that you're already making that 180 million, right? You're reaching that point.
Yep.
But it would be lovely if also more Dutch companies are going to join.
So I think there's two ways of looking at this. One, and I've never really worked in the Netherlands. I don't live in the Netherlands, but we've decided to set it up in the Netherlands because we're extremely well positioned in the Netherlands to help move this forward.
Yeah.
So if you look at the six companies we invested in, you alluded to this earlier, there's a number of Dutch companies, there's companies, foreign companies that we actually have brought to the Netherlands.
Yeah.
So that is, you know, headcount, that is R&D investment. So that really helps the Dutch economy. What I think is quite interesting is that in terms of capital, the Netherlands has one of the largest, you know, capital reserves in the world, given our pension funds, etc. That capital doesn't really seem to invest in these kind of transitions. And yes, there's always the best intentions and there's some pledges recently being made. But, you know, when it comes to it, if you look at our fund, and we'll, as I said, get to 180, it's minimal, the engagement of Dutch investors. And that's a real shame. A shame because it obviously took us a little bit more effort. But more importantly, we need to do this together.
Yeah.
And that lack of engagement from Dutch, you know, institutional investors, I was quite surprised with. Now, as I said, we got there in the end because the proposition is strong enough. But that is something that if we want to play a role as the Netherlands in innovation, in transition, in disruption, we need to put that capital to work. And we need to put that capital to work in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite critical. And as I said, I know there's quite a few stakeholders that we work with that are trying to address this, but we're not there yet.
No. No, because you're also working now with one of the investors, the Groningen Investment Fund. Can they also make a change? Because they also made a, you also made a podcast with them, and a lot of Dutch companies are listening now also to that podcast. So also maybe this program is also a good way to also, well, inspire each other.
Correct. Yeah.
I fully agree. I mean, I think the Dutch do a very good job in seed funding. I think there is an incredibly amount of maybe too many different funds in even region. And then that also becomes difficult because you, as an entrepreneur, sometimes you have no idea where to go to and what, to say it in Dutch, what potje can I get my money from? But I think, you know, we have a lot of, with RVO, with the different kind of local groeifonds, InvestNL, there is a lot of capability and money trying to be put at work. But that's mainly in that that pre-stage of seed and pre-seed. It is that next step that is needed to get to that funding of that extra 40, 50 million that needs to be supported. And there are some good examples out there. There's a couple, and talking about Groningen, I think is a good example of an area where they're really trying to put development and then the Dutch banks are willing to support. But they've had some headwinds. There's been some cases that failed. But also in some cases, because it's been too easy to get that pre-seed money, and we said it earlier, then you, if you only go bankrupt because you spend too much money. And if you then think, there will be somebody else who comes in again. But you need to have way more rigor. And it's a bit odd that on the pre-seed and seed, there's enough. You can get on the right angles and there's a lot of subsidies available. Then there's a whole bunch of nothing. And then once you finally have created that right plant and you're making some cash flow positive, again, there's a huge amount of, you know, investment banks out there, infrastructure out there to fund it. But that middle part and what we call, I think, the dead valley, we're at the moment the only one. Even our competition, as much as you can call it, is said to... is also not willing to step in as early as we are. So for us, it's surprising that pension funds are not willing to take, because the risk is, well, there's always risk, but it is, we step in at the fact that there's no technology risk anymore. So for them, that should be the way in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that probably adds to what we discussed before. This ultimately, as a fund, we're not going to move the needle, right? So you need to unlock significant additional capital. And as Jan Willem said, that could be equity, it could be debt financing, it could be, you know, grant funding. And ultimately, and that's the mission that we set out as a fund, we want to have, you know, unlock a multiple of 10 in terms of additional capital to really kind of help move this forward. And what you will see in this market, and that's very similar to the energy transition, the traditional players, so if you go back to the energy transition where now a significant part of our energy is produced by renewable energy assets, they're all owned by infrastructure investors, by asset managers. None of them are owned by industry players, well, at least a very small percentage. And that is really something that we'll see here happening as well. So the producers of the past will no longer be the producers of the future. And that also means that ultimately, the way we set up our businesses, our investments, is to make sure it has a good risk return profile for indeed those same asset managers. And in order for them to play a role, they need to engage now because we need to help shape this industry at now as we speak, rather than, you know, as Jan Willem said, be stuck in this kind of death valley. Because the market is there, the transition is there. The very simple thing that the companies we invest in are doing is change fossil feedstock into sustainable feedstock, leaving everything as it is, leaving a multi-billion euro infrastructure as it is. So it's very simple, and technologies are proven the moment we step in. So it's, you know, extremely low-hanging fruit. Now, why doesn't it happen? It's because, as we said, it's disruptive, so the incumbents don't really want to do this. They have a vested interest in something else. And also they don't understand that this hub and spoke model, the distributed model, means that ultimately relationships will be different.
Yeah.
And these will be assets that will not be owned by the industry. And that's a broader theme that you see in the economy. Most of the, I guess, service providers or, I guess, pen product providers will probably be infrastructure owned. And you'll have then users and suppliers. But we won't have what we had in the past where you have a few players that actually dominate the production of energy or dominate the production of a commodity. It will be very different going forward. And that has all to do with the way we kind of put together our infrastructure and the way it's actually being financed.
And I think to just to add on that is the other angle of it is you're localizing. So I think people don't underestimate that. Today we're you know, getting our crude or gas from a lot of different areas around the world, and then we're trying to bring it all to Europe or to the big hubs to convert it. Look at your own trash bin. That's your new resource. Now, and so that to us is really the opportunity that you see that this is a localized opportunity. You can be dependent on your own fossil, not you have basically your own fossil fuel, but then recycle to create circularity. And that independence by itself, I think that's where the real opportunity lies.
Yes, there are a lot of opportunities, and I really think it's wonderful what you're doing. Also giving companies the opportunity to really grow in this kind of way. And I think it's very important. Jan-Willem Muller and Jeroen Kelder, I really want to thank you for sharing your expertise, and I'm wishing you a wonderful future together.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Van hippe start-up tot ijzersterke multinational.
Iedereen praat mee.
Dit is New Business Radio.